BGU Radio. Hi and welcome to AfriCast Podcast. This is a part of a series of podcasts from economy, politics, and society in 20th century in Africa. Lectures by Dr. Ushiwendu Kafukurinani, popularly know him as Dr. Ushe in class. My name is David Kim, student from Nigeria. Today I have with me my co-host and colleagues from the Africa Studies Program at BGU, Laurentia.
I am Laurentia Mate from Ghana.
And also from here, Israel, we have Ohad Grossman.
Good afternoon. My name is Ohad. I'm from Israel.
Our discussion today will be an effort to understand Pan-Africanism as an ideology. To achieve this, we spoke to people in various countries on the African continent, from Uganda, Zambia, Ghana, and Zimbabwe.
AfriCast, the podcast of the Africa Center at Ben-Gurion University of the Negev, produced by Shachar Livneh and Omri Ovadia.
This is an analysis of the relevance of Pan-Africanism, if it's still alive or not. Many people are quite conversant with the term Pan-Africanism. It's often mentioned on discourses of a united African continent and was the founding ideology that led to the formation of the African Union. For the sake of those who don't really know what Pan-Africanism is, I'll want to adopt the definition of Pan-Africanism from one who has been heralded as the greatest promoter of the ideology, in the person of Kwame Nkrumah. And he basically described it as a movement for cooperation between all people of African descent and for the political union of an independent Africa.
Is it a new ideology from the last years?
Actually not. As an ideology, Pan-Africanism can be traced as far back as 1906 from a speech, The Regeneration of Africa, by Pixley Kai Isakaseme, who eventually was the brain behind the formation of the ANC as we know it, the African National Congress, the ruling party in Southern Africa.
We can talk about this with a friend of mine, Mr. Yeboa, who lives in Israel and from Ghana, who is a Pan-African enthusiast. So, Mr. Yeboa, how has Pan-Africanism evolved?
Well, Pan-Africanism actually was mainly started by Honorable Marcos Mosiah Garvey in America in the early 1920s as a liberation movement for all Africans, both in the diaspora, which is America, the Caribbean, and those on the continent of Africa, under Jim Crow law, slavery, and colonization, as it was, with his motto, Africa for Africans, both home and abroad. This movement of Marcus Garvey led to the changing of perception of how the Africans view themselves after centuries of European institutional deception and religious deception. This led to the agitation for freedom in America and calls for decolonization of the continent of Africa.
Thank you, Mr. Yeboa. Now, when we hear the roots of the Pan-Africanism, I want to ask another guest of us, Mr. Nyukodoya, history lecturer from a university in Zimbabwe. What is Pan-Africanism for you today?
My understanding and appreciation of Pan-Africanism is a concept that deals with the solidarity and oneness and unity of people of Africa in their struggles to emancipate themselves from social, economic, and political challenges that they encounter.
I want to ask the same question also our colleague, Charity Eseno from Uganda. How do you see Pan-Africanism?
To me, Pan-Africanism, as I don't know if I should call myself a millennial or a millennial, yes, born in the 90s, and the life that I've lived, and according to my experience, it basically is the I would feel like it's a preservation and celebration of African values. That's what I would feel from just what I've been hearing about it and the conversations I've had. That's what I see. Another maybe definition I would see or aspect of Pan-Africanism is the concept of a united Africa. So whereby we have all the countries joining together like the United States and forming one unified, I would say, continent with, of course, we have diversified African values, and Africans are not a monolith, but just to be able to have our uniqueness and our independence and sort of have a protection of ourselves and our culture and our values in the larger group, which is the entire continent. So for me, that's basically it, a celebration of African values and a united Africa geographically and economically and politically. Yeah.
You're wondering if Pan-Africanism is good for Africa, Mr. Yeboa?
Is it good for Africa? Yes, Pan-Africanism is a very good and brilliant idea, as in unity, there is strength and wealth creation.
So we just heard from Mr. Yeboa how good Pan-Africanism is for Africa. We want to know then why Africa is not united. Mr. Nyakudia?
The main challenge that Africa continues to face is the interference from outside, which sponsors several wars in different parts of the continent, so that Africa will not be united, so that they can easily benefit economically in terms of extracting resources from Africa. If Africa is going to be united, then that will be difficult for the capitalists to extract the minerals. So they will always sponsor disunity, they will always sponsor violence, they will always sponsor a repressive in the autocratic leaders, so that they continue to dominate.
I want to refer the same question another guest, Mr. Jonathan Case from Zambia. Why today Africa isn't united?
The many problem why that is not happening. There are two, actually. Number one, the problem has been caused by our colonial masters. Number two, it's greediness by our political leaders. Our political leaders are so greedy, and that is the biggest problem of Africa, because the moment you are corrupt, you are greedy, then development is not on your way.
To conclude this part of the episode, I want to ask you, Charity Esenu, who in your opinion, in your own view, are the thought leaders when it comes to Pan-Africanism currently?
I think, this is just my opinion. Again, let me reiterate that. But I think from the past leaders and voices of Pan-Africanism, the Kenneth Kaundas, the Jomo Kenyattas, and the Kwame Nkrumahs, the Julius Nyereres, all those people, they were more vocal, they were more centered on the concept. Like, it was more of a philosophical movement, yes, political as well, but they felt so strongly and passionate about it. They were very vocal, they were very serious, very directed efforts towards achieving some of these values and norms of Africanness that they wanted to preserve, that they wanted to celebrate. But who are the leaders of the political voices of Pan-Africanism today? I couldn't really think of one, to be honest with you. Like, it seems that the movement is sort of, I don't know if it's dying out, or I don't even think Gen Z people know about the concept of Pan-Africanism, to be honest. It seems like it's dying out, and it seems that the political leaders, the vocal ones anyway, are more concerned with other things, and because other things as opposed to the Pan-Africanism, which to me is a mindset, you know, above everything, a mindset of my culture, my values, my identity as an African is valuable and is valid, you know, and it needs to be celebrated, and I shouldn't hide it, and I should show the world, I should be vocal about it. It's dying out. The politicians are more concerned with other things, economics. They can't even unite and come together. Everyone is on his own thing.
So, Mr. Nakujia, what do you think? It's possible to achieve Pan-Africanism?
It's not easy. There's so much fragmentation, there's so much polarization. Look, for instance, if you see what is happening within the Southern African region, South Africa in particular, where you find that the people on the ground themselves being sponsored to rise against fellow Africans from other countries, the so-called xenophobic disturbances that are currently taking place. It's not easy because our leaders and the media in the various countries do not speak with that one voice, one objective. So for me, the challenge for Africa is not a solution that can just come from inside. We need to change the global setup from the United Nations, its structure itself. Then you come to the AU. It's going to be a very gradual process. How do you get the African leaders to speak with one voice or to have the same objectives and goals, the same interests?
Mr. Case, can you answer that question too? Can it possible to achieve Pan-Africanism today?
If you look at AU summit, all heads of states, all presidents of Africa, they go to Cairo and meet and have a meeting, and they look at issues affecting Africa. To me, has been an academic exercise. The problem with Africa is Africans. The only thing we need is to develop our human capital. Lack of exposure, lack of knowledge of most of the things is to why Africa is poor today. So for Africa to change, for Africa to develop, we need to educate a lot of people. So the problem with Africa is education. Once many people are educated, you are going to see Africa will never be the same again.
Okay, so we've heard from our esteemed guest from all over the continent and things they had to say, ranging from how it has evolved, what Pan-Africanism is to them, you know, and why we're not united in their own view, and if Pan-Africanism in itself is good for the continent. I'd like to hear from the house people, my people here, my co-host. What in your view, I mean, I want to hear your takes basically on what Pan-Africanism is and what you think. Laurentia, you want to?
So to me, Pan-Africanism is being embraced by Africans in the diaspora. But with Africans living in their home country, they do not embrace this. They do not want this whole United States situation. They prefer their individuality, like I am a Ghanaian, I am a Nigerian. They only see themselves together as one people when they are in the diaspora. That's my thought.
Okay, Ohad, I mean, you just heard what Laurentia said. What's your take? Do you agree, how or not?
Yes, I agree with Laurentia. Pan-Africanism is a very novel idea, but when I look as an outsider from another continent to Africa, it looks like today it's like a dream that even the local people can't see how they can achieve it.
Wow, that's interesting. I mean, sort of what I think, a few points. I interestingly don't agree with both of you guys, right? And
you are the optimistic one.
Probably.
Yeah. I have a lot to say about that.
I mean, maybe I would get to convince you guys. And yeah, so a few points. Most the aliveness, like I said the other time, can be seen in not necessarily the people or individuals talking about Pan-Africanism, promoting it. I mean, especially not in the light of historical times with Kwame Nkrumah and the likes. But you can see structures and organizations that are being put in place that talk a lot about the Pan-African idea. A very good example is an initiative, that's the AFCFTA, the African Free Continental Trade Zone, that was initiated on the 1st of January, actually, of 2021.
Really?
Yeah. The agreement aims to create a single market for goods and services in order to deepen the economic integration of Africa, right? Integration of Africa, Pan-African idea. I mean, also the trade area could have a combined gross domestic product of 3.4 trillion. You know, there's a lot of arguments on the achievement of this, which is really dependent on policies and reforms and various trade facilitation measures that could be put in place. To put this into perspective, right, 17% of African exports are intracontinental. Compare that with 59% for Asia and 68% for Europe. See what such a deal or an agreement can bring about.
So what about an African can travel within just 26% of countries in the continent, where we have 54 countries? If not for sub-regional agreements like ECOWAS and the East African Community, there would have been no free border entry. What do you have to say about that? This concludes that about half of the continent's people still require visas before traveling. Most passport holders of other continents can often show up at these borders of many African countries, pay reasonable fee without paperwork, with minimal fees gain, and they gain entry. South Africa, for instance. But then there is a problem with African countries not being welcome to their neighboring African countries just because they don't have visas. They require visas to enter this African continent.
I totally agree with you, Laurentia. But that is like pre-African free continental free trade agreement. Current agreement that was just signed 2021 is a very new agreement. All those, the invisible borders will be taken off. There will be free, like I said, free movement of goods and services. I don't have to move from Nigeria to Ghana, for instance. Even though Ghana is an ECOWAS country, I will have to apply for a work permit. But with the AFC, the African Free Continental, is a tongue twister. Yeah. With that agreement, I could go to Ghana and work. We will all agree that these things take time and it takes, you know, a lot of efforts, like I said. But it's definitely going to happen if it goes into effect. Another point is the Agenda 2063, okay. Right? The Agenda 2063 is a blueprint and master plan for transforming Africa into a global powerhouse for the future. I got this from a research from the AU website. It is the strategic framework for delivering on Africa's goal for inclusive and sustainable development, and is a concrete manifestation of the Pan-African drive for unity, self-determination, freedom, progress, and collective prosperity pursued under Pan-Africanism and African Renaissance. This was from the UN website. That's to tell you that Pan-Africanism is still very well alive.
Okay, maybe I can say it was dead, but we are trying to rekindle it. Let's put it that way.
Yes, so at least I'm getting to buy you into my camp.
Not really, but because maybe my Ghanaian president, Nana Akufo-Addo, is trying to do something similar with this whole ECOWAS card thing where we can use it as a free passport to other countries.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, so to kind of seal my arguments, guys, I understand the doubt in the continent. I mean, I do have that once in a while. But if there's an area the AU, I think, should improve on, is in its messaging. Because when you look at the agenda, it had various interesting goals. 20 goals, actually. Now, other peristatals, I mean, the popular one, the AU, you know, the African Union, is a very good indication of its aliveness. The AUC, African Union Commission, you have the... Do you know that Africa has a development organization, NEPAD?
I'm yet to see it happen.
AUDA, NEPAD, it's headquarters in South Africa. All those are proofs to the fact that I think Pan-Africanism is very alive.
Well, I can agree with you just because...
Welcome to the camp.
Dr. Ari Kana, an AU ambassador to United States in June 11, 2019, had in a video, I chanced on a video on YouTube, that she spoke about Pan-Africanism being alive and she making it a must for the people in the diaspora to pick up the spirit of Pan-Africanism and let it strive. So just a few bits, but I'm not convinced.
1963, when our Pan-African leaders got together in an effort to undo the Berlin Conference, but they failed. Because when they went to Addis Ababa at the invitation of Emperor Haile Selassie, they were divided. We had the Pan-African group that said Africa for the Africans, African Union now. There were only 7 countries: Ghana, Guinea, Mali, Egypt, Morocco, Algeria, and Tunisia. The rest were the nationalists. They said, let's go slow. So it is, they won. We often say Africa lost when the Pan-African group lost. Year in, year out, the leaders came up with a compromise which they called the Organization of African Unity. They meet twice a year to discuss issues pivotal to the continent. The issue of an Africa speaking with one voice was tabled at every summit. And year in and year out, they failed to reach consensus until March of last year, 2018, when we finally agreed on what we are now calling the African Continental Free Trade Area, where Africa is now saying enough is enough. Africa must speak with one voice. That's the only way for Africa to take her place on the world stage is when Africa enters the world stage as one giant Africa.
There you go. There you have it. People joining their voices to the Pan-African cause. I want to thank all our interviewees, Mr. Yeboah from Ghana, Charity Esenu from Uganda, Mr. Keys from Zambia, Mr. Yekudia, pardon me, from Zimbabwe, for joining us and giving us a wide and accurate and personalized perspective on the issue of Pan-Africanism. I want to thank myself. And
thank you, David.
And my co-host, Ohad and Laurentia.
Thank you, too.
For being very amazing contributors to the whole production. And I also want to thank BG Radio for hosting us in this amazing studio. I mean, right in front of me, I can see a picture of the Ben Gurion himself, an amazing studio. And for our amiable, very patient podcast producer, Shaha. And thank you all for listening.